Blog Talk Radio.
Rockers in Recovery Media is dedicated to carrying the message of addiction recovery through music, news, events, and festivals taking place within and not limited to the clean and sober community.
Hey, good morning. John Hollis with Rockers in Recovery. Want to thank everybody for tuning in this morning. Of course, if you're listening to Waking Up Blessed, I'm the host again, John Hollis, and we're sponsored this morning by Sober Map App. You can check out Sober Map App on Facebook at Sober Map App. You can also download the app, which will help you find 12-step meetings in your area, or if you're traveling. It is the summer. A lot of people are traveling. You need a meeting. Go to Sober Map App, download the app to your phone, and it will help you find a local meeting where you're at. And you can do that at, the App Store and Google Store. Go there, download Sober Map App. This morning we have a great guest, Dr. Nick Colangelo. I've known Nick for a few years now. And most importantly, he is somebody that has dedicated his life for the last 42 years to helping addicts and alcoholics. He's been a counselor since 1975 and just has a huge, huge story of inspiration. And you know something, no bones about it. He tells you how it is. And he's been a huge asset in my life. And him and his wife, Trish, lovely people. We're going to bring Nick on now. We're going to find out how he does it and how he's done it for the last 42 years without, finding it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug. Good morning, Nick, and welcome to, of course, the show this morning.
Morning, John. Happy day in the village.
Happy day, brother.
How's everything shaking?
Say, hey, listen, it's shaking without bacon, so we're doing good.
You know what? That goes way back, too. You know, when you were talking, you said, how do I do it? I do it the old-fashioned way, one day at a time. Just heads
it,
up.
Baby. So Waking Up Blessed is just that. We get another day, we're waking up blessed. And what do you do on a daily basis to start your day? You know, do you pray, meditate? How does that work for you? Just give us a little bit of a background on that.
Well, you know, like most people, I was pretty undisciplined when I first got sober, and lots of people had they used to tell you what to do. They didn't make suggestions back then. So I wake up, and when my eyes open, the first thing, you know, there's always clutter in my head. But as soon as I'm conscious and aware of where I am, I say thank you. And then I ask for help to get through the day and do good things. I also roll out of bed and get on my knees and ask to be of service and lead me in the right direction. And I get up and I read. I've been reading now since the first night I was in a hospital, the 24-hour-a-day book, the old book from Hazleton. The black book. And then I read the AA book, the reader for the day. And again, I'm renewing, let me be a service, and I try and pay attention to what the readings say. And then I read something on gratitude. And then I get going and move my day out. And, my commitment is to try and get to a meeting every day unless I can't. I had an old friend who's passed away, and he said, going to meetings ought to be like brushing your teeth. You shouldn't be questioning it. You should just go. And it creates a discipline. So, you know, I mean, I don't get to a meeting every day, but every day I can, I do. And it's not like I'm trying to figure something out. I got a bunch of people that I talk to every day that are in recovery. I've got friends like you that call from other parts of the country that I talk to. And then, you know, the day unfolds and I do what shows up. The last thing I do is say thank you at the end of the day, you know. So, you know, saying help me and thank you seem to be great bookends for a lot of the characterological defects that I have and, you know, the wandering thoughts that wander through this brain. and it keeps me pretty prepared. Yeah, I got my off days like everybody else. I don't want to have this sound like, you know, there's some kind of perfection involved in this. But you know what? With that practice, you never go too far off the pond before you know you're off the pond or somebody's telling you, and you know what to come back and what to do. So that's my practice, and it's been that way for 42 years, going on 43.
Do you find, October will be 43 years, correct?
Yes. Yep. God willing,
do you
think don't rise and I don't die.
That's how you become an old-timer, right?
Yeah, you know what? That's part of the way you become an old-timer. It's hard to believe when I hang out with some of the guys I got sober with. How'd we wind up here? The answer always comes back to one day at a time.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful thing. So, I got a question for you because you said something that's really important. You have your up days, you have your down days. And may I glad or sad, we don't use no matter what. But one of the things that life changes, and life, you go through changes, and it might not be necessarily be the ones you want, but they're going to happen regardless. You were a huge, huge person that was dealing with a treatment center up in your area, and you've retired now. You've kind of moved on. You're with the foundation, the Clearbrook Foundation. What was that like for you? What was that experience like for you to kind of let go and just move on? How was it?
Well, it's a little bit surreal because one of the things that I realized is that most of my career I was on 7 days a week. And so the first couple of weeks, I no longer had 100 employees to be concerned about or be interacting with, and I no longer had 70 patients and their family members to be. And, you know, quite frankly, it was different, and it seemed odd. But also, there was a kind of a relief in it, you know, that, hey, this isn't bad. Well, what's fascinating about the life that I have, I am continually involved with phone calls and people either looking for assistance or doing something involving recovery. So that's been a little over 90 days, and I go to work every day, and again, it's a little bit different, but it's not, because it is still helping people do what they need to have done when they call and they ask for help. So I'm not done. Somebody says, are you semi-retired? I said, I don't know. I'm still working 8-10 hours a day. it's just different, you know. But it's good. It's all good. I don't want to be too hokey, but when you're involved in other people's lives and you're trying to be of service and you're just doing the best you can to help the people who call and ask for help, you're never bored, and you're left with having tremendous meaning in your life. It's kind of like working in God's garden every day. And whether you're in a treatment center or whether you're doing that in a crisis center, or whether you're doing that in a sober house, wherever you're doing that, or you're just sitting outside a meeting and people are saying, so-and-so needs help, what are we going to do? How do we do that? Yesterday I sent two people to treatment. They called, linking up with some other people that do that. So it's extraordinarily rewarding, and it's not by accident. You used the word blessed with the program this morning. My life has just been blessed. Trisha's life has been blessed. And that gives you some type of reward that I'm not capable of articulating. Just good stuff. People who know it, and the people who don't probably never will.
Nick, you have a powerful message of hope and love and inspiration, and you have for many, many years. Just to give a little backstory, I think it was like 2011, I called Nick up, 2010, and I said, told him what we were doing with Rockers in Recovery and all that. And we stayed on the phone for, I don't know, it was like an hour. And when I hung up the phone, I felt like, you know, it was just a whole touch of gratitude. Actually, that motivated me for the rest of the day, and, you know, I've considered him a friend ever since, and just a great guy, and has helped us at Rockers in Recovery, and me personally, and Lori. You know, Lori just came through, you know, all of her stuff with the lumpectomy and is starting her chemo, and Nick's been right there, and other friends and people. That's how this works, you know. People rally around each other if there's an issue, you know, Nick having his hip operation or whatever it may be. We rally around each other and we support each other and we show love and understanding and care and how can we help, you know. And then as you just said eloquently, you know, that, you know, we're here to be able to be of maximum service to other people and help them get through that eye in the needle, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, you just said it remarkably well. We used to have a clubhouse up here in Wilkes-Barre. It's not around anymore. It used to be the Yana Club. And, you know, you never have to be alone again. And coming in to recovery for the last, what I hope is the last time, I remember that despair and loneliness, and I've never experienced that again since turning the corner. You know, all of us guys that have, and gals that kind of get this and try and hold on to it, we, especially in today's crazy world, say, well, what's it all about? And somehow I was granted the gift of willingness, which I never had. You know, I didn't like anything that was going on with me. I didn't like the things I was doing. I didn't like the consequences I was paying or the, what I was heaping on other people. But I was powerless, which I learned in AA, about doing anything about it, and my will wouldn't work. And then 2 hours after I was busy trying to either kill myself or just, you know, do my game, I was struck by a willingness to go in a different direction. And, you know, one of the things I really like sharing with people is, you know, I do all these other things not because they're a great idea, but because I believe they protect the gift that I have, and that's my responsibility. I'm going to be around to share the gift. I have to protect the gift. And the protection of that gift is doing these same things over and over again every day. And I was taught that by people that aren't here anymore. You know, I really was curious about the people who were sober 5, 10, 15 years, and I used to see what they were doing. And then I'd ask them, why are you doing that? They said, we're protecting a gift, kid. We're protecting a gift, and if we don't protect it, we'll lose it like any other gift. Now, one of my concerns today is that we're trying to use, by the way, I think medicine saves lives. I think to be at war with abstinence programs and that medicine's the answer, I think it's great for harm reduction, but it is not the answer, and it won't produce willingness. You know, we have to help each other, person to person, develop that willingness. That's what happened to me, along with, I think, some spirit gift that comes along with that. So this willingness and this surrender everybody talks about is our responsibility to protect the gift that we have and then try and share it with other people so they can experience it.
Amazing stuff. And I think you're hitting on the medication end of it. And you know, there are people, you know, there's a person we both know, and he says all the time, keep them alive until they get clean. And I believe that part of it. And I think there's a huge disconnect in young people. And I think online stuff has a lot to do with that. You know, I have me and Lori. Lori has a 32-year-old son, and, you know, all he does is game all day. He doesn't work. He doesn't do anything. All he does is game. You know, right? He doesn't live with us. Yeah. You know, we don't have to deal with it. But, but again, when there's that huge of a disconnect, and you can't really, you know, go through that experience of learning to, you know, have a friend and ask for help and do all of those things, I think a lot of deterrence is the online stuff that goes on today. It's just moving so fast, Nick, that a lot of the kids are, you know, they would rather text each other than to go sit and be face-to-face with each other.
Well, look, we, you know, I think all of us older people, us. We all had our problems with connecting. There is more distraction for the connection today. And, the online stuff is there. You know, parents don't drag their kids to church anymore. Sometimes it's okay to talk about a higher power or God. Sometimes it's not. It seems like everybody wants to fight with each other today rather than take care of one another. And you can talk about the problems. You know, I get an opportunity to talk to a lot of people who have been on methadone and on Suboxone, and they've come off of it. And there are a couple of issues that, you know, that they state. Is one, physically they're fine. But they also talk about how their emotion and spirit is dead. So, you know, when I get an opportunity, I don't want to fight with people over. You know, I get upset when they say the abstinent program doesn't work. They ought to go into the AA and the NA rooms and do a best practices, because there's something with the money on the other side and how people are making it, and, you know, big pharmaceutical, but I don't want to go there either. What I do want to talk about is that there's no protocols. We get people up here, and as soon as they go on Suboxone, they are told they got to be on it the rest of their life. That's genocide. That's terrible. You know, that comes from the old methadone days when people were told that. And by the way, some people will, should, and need to be on it for the rest of their life. But it's minuscule compared to the masses that are being medicated today. Now, this reminds me a lot of back in the 70s when people thought alcoholism was a Valium deficiency. And every doctor and every psychiatrist would put people on the non-addictive drug Valium until everybody got addicted to Valium, and then they had to come off of that. I mean, look, you cannot produce willingness and surrender with a drug. Matter of fact, I can present a case you're interfering with hitting a bottom because you feel, you know, you're still on something. The other thing I say about it, nowhere in the history of addiction has a drug been the answer. It has been a system, but not the answer. And the last thing I'm going to say is, you know, 3-4 times a week I send somebody to a Suboxone program. Now they got acute mental illness problem. They have trauma problems, or they have, they're dealing with traumas either from overseas or physical and sexual abuse. And they've got terrible addiction, and they have zero coping mechanisms, and they're the people you got to try and keep alive, support, wrap into a protective system. I'm not sure we should be putting garden variety neurotic adolescent alcoholics on a lot of drugs. And when you interview the ones that come off of that, that's what they're saying too, but they don't have a voice. The pharmaceutical and the medicine people distributing it seem to have the large voice today, along with the government. So it's going to be a shakeout over the next 2 or 3 years. It's a shame because they're dismantling an abstinent 28-day program model that will have to reinvent itself when that's over. We'll step back and we'll watch what happens. You know, we know AA and NA works because we experience it. The people who don't know it have never experienced it. There is a place for medicine. And Bill Wilson used to talk about, let's not argue with everybody. You know, there are people that need psychiatrists. There are people who need doctors. There are people who need counselors. They need trauma specialists. But they all don't need it. And that's where I get into the discussion. You know, what's your protocol? What type of real in-depth evaluations are you doing? You know, what about the onset of adolescent, pre-adolescent medications? Now you got to step up and just not guess about this and say, and by the way, the parents, unfortunately, have been co-opted. And, you know, I'm a parent, a grandparent. There's a what are you going to do to keep your kid alive? Well, most people would say anything. So the anything right now is everybody thinks that putting them on drugs, medications are going to work. We'll see. I have a lot of questions about it.
Amazing stuff. You know, I've seen it since, I don't know, it really started to happen around 2000. We did our first show on Rockers in Recovery with the opioid epidemic in 2009. You know, I think they were saying at that point that it was affecting on a daily basis less than 12 people, or 12 or 13 people were dying from it each day. And where we're at today. And I seen over that whole time period the government, especially the SAMHSA end of it, start to go in that MAT direction and started to push that MAT direction. And then started to funnel in, you know, how, you know, 12-step organizations weren't working. And that dogma started. And then and it's a shame because, you know, if we're looking at, like, I just read an article, I put it up in regards to Bill Wilson and the acid tests and all of that stuff. And the reason that I, you know, put that up was real simple. It wasn't in regards to, because most people would say, well, that's a relapse, that's this, that's that. That was Bill and a team of people under the guidance and supervision studying what they could do to help move forward. And in the end, they said, listen, you know, it really came down to, it was something that, yeah, we experienced this, but, you know, abstinence is really the best way.
Well, you know, if you look at the first 100 people, they were pretty desperate, and I mean desperate people. I think why the statistics play around and you can use it doesn't work is because when you have adolescents, they don't have the experience of failure and pain, and they come into the 12-step programs, AA and or NA, and they're not desperate. Well, if you're not desperate, it's not going to work very well. It's going to put a Band-Aid and a patch on. And until you're desperate enough to change your mind and do something entirely different, everybody fails at being sober and clean. Now, I want to mention something about, you know, people dying. You know, someone ought to go back to the 20s and come forward and pre-AA. And take a look at how many people a day were dying of alcoholism in the United States. This isn't the first time we've been here. It's just a different substance. And I have another little prediction we're seeing come up through West Virginia. And all of a sudden, people are stepping. You know, the street always tells you what's going on if you just listen. And it's not going to happen at Harvard. It's not going to happen at SAMHSA. Because by the time they get the information, everything's morphed into something else. The pandemic that we're in is switching off of the opiates, and it is switching into cocaine and methamphetamine. It's remarkable, going back to the old drugs. And by the way, everything that you test the opiates for, guess what? Meth won't pop up.
Wow.
The street just morphs around whatever the problems are.
Yeah. Nick, great stuff, great information. And you're now with, you're doing a lot of work with the Clearbrook Foundation. Can you give us some information on that? Because I didn't have it with me, but I wanted to find out how people could contact you if they wanted to.
Well, they can contact me. You know my cell number is public. It's 570-313-3001. The foundation is presently running a place we call the Icebox up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And there are over 35 meetings a week there from AA, NA, Al-Anon, Drug Court. Almost anyone that wants to be doing a meeting, we provide the space, and you know, it's basically free of charge. The other thing we're doing is that the program that Trish started, and I started 15 years ago. Family Help and Families operates in 8 different communities, and we're looking to expand that. And we are presently looking at all types of possibilities of what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. It's only been about 90 days since Clearbrook Treatment Center has been sold. So we're closing that down and in the process of reviewing all types of possible situations from housing, halfway houses, and how we might support the community. So more to be
I love it.
Coming out in the near future.
Well, we will definitely have you back on as that starts to roll out, so that way we can get people up to speed. And, you know, huge heart, you and Trish both. Love to both of you, so I want to thank you for taking the time this morning and being on Waking Up Blessed on Rockers and Recovery Radio. And kudos to you, brother. Love you much.
Yep.
And we will
too,
definitely
brother.
Talk
much
soon.
Love. You and Laura. Love
definitely.
You, guys.
All right, brother. We'll talk soon.
Right. Bye.
All right, guys. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And Dr. Nick Colangelo, Waking Up Blessed. 42 years, going on 43 years, one day at a time, continuous recovery, continuous clean and sober recovery. And I want to thank Nick for all he has done for Rockers in Recovery, and most importantly, if you're seeking help and you're at the page right now listening, you're going to see that there's Recovery Media Partners Addiction Recovery Resources. You got Clearbrook Treatment Centers, Amethyst Recovery Center, The Shores Treatment and Recovery, and Hope and Grace Recovery Centers, and all of their information is right there. So if you're on the Blog Talk Radio page and you're listening to the show right now, that information can help somebody that might need the help. Give a call. Those guys will help you out. If they can't help you, they'll provide somebody that can. And, of course, Waking Up Blessed. Today's episode is sponsored by SoberMap app, and of course, the sponsors of this is our 905th episode, so we want to thank SoberMap for sponsoring us. Been around doing this since 2008, rockersinrecovery.com can give you all that information. Got a great song we're going to play this morning, Doc Holliday. He's a great guy out of Nashville, wrote a song, A Long Way Down. We're going to listen to that song right now, and of course, we will enjoy our day 1 minute at a time. I want to thank everybody for listening. Long Way Down, Doc Holliday. You can find him at Doc Holliday on Facebook.
That rainbow's end, is it hovering just beyond the ledge? I swear I'd reach out and grab, but I'm scared I'd hang from the smallest thread. Promise takes you to the very edge, and it's a long way down from here. It's a long way down from here. And all those faces looking up so scared, saying it's a long way down from there.
April. Can I catch a ride? There's something, Lord, there's something on the other side. They reach their warning hands, but the canyon is deep and wide. That leap of faith can leave you blinded in the night, and it's a long way down from here. It's a long way down. Darling's face is looking up so scared, saying it's a long way down from there.
That was Mr. Fitzpatrick. It was not our friend, our friend Doc Holliday. Made a big boo-boo there. That's okay. It's a good way to start the day. Make sure that I'm humbled. You guys have a great day. Much love. And we will definitely be speaking soon. And hey, listen, if you're out there right now and you want to find out some information about an upcoming an event that's coming up, you want to go to World Sober Music Day on Facebook. Check it out, and you guys will enjoy that. World Sober Music Day, check it out on Facebook. Talk to you guys soon.
Rockers in Recovery Radio is based on opinion only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any health or mental health issue of any kind. If you feel you need help for any health-related issues, please contact a physician or mental health professional. The opinions expressed by our guests are not necessarily those of Rockers in Recovery.